Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Beautiful day, Tony. Oh my gosh.
Well, it's a beautiful day any day you're having brunch, right?
Oh yeah. I love brunch. Brunch is fun. Well, just the idea of family getting together or friends and family getting together. Well, but it's always a little traumatic, too, because egg dishes are so critical. They're critical.
Dramatic or traumatic?
It's both dramatic. It can be dramatic, but mostly it can be traumatic.
I'm never injured by the failure of an egg dish, I have to admit, psychologically, emotionally,
well,
or otherwise.
I don't know. You know, your guests might be unhappy if your eggs are overcooked.
My guests are not going to be unhappy.
Or not salted.
They won't be allowed.
No. Well, they'll be drinking, so they'll probably just be able to get themselves through it all, right?
Managing oneself, the key to brunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
I think people, I was thinking about this before we were preparing for the program, with brunch, I think about things.
Yes.
I think people give themselves permission. The reason that people are so unreasonably happy to go to brunch or to come to brunch in someone's house.
Mm-hmm. They're unreasonably happy?
Like breakfast is nice, lunch is nice. And there are little treats in that. But
it's
brunch
a twofer.
It's not the twofer. It's not the compromise. It's not the more is available thing. It's the my productivity is shot for the day, and I'm okay with that. I like that.
Oh, that's good for you. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's what brunch is really about.
Well,
you're enjoying yourself with your friends and mm-hmm. family or whoever you're having brunch with, and whether that's in a restaurant or whether that's in mm-hmm. your home or a friend's home. But it's sort of like saying, today I'm off.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
So let's just say, hypothetically, there's brunch going on at your farm, at your house.
Well,
you have all kinds of stuff in market. So
yeah,
what are you going to cook?
So what would be some of my ideas for things on the menu at the farm? There are a couple of ways I would start. And to have a cold soup, a chilled soup, is really wonderful, obviously, this time of year. And with all the heirloom tomatoes on the market, gazpacho is a beautiful thing. I can also utilize my garden that way. And with gazpacho, you're using many different types of heirloom tomatoes so that you have different levels of sweetness and acidity in the gazpacho. I use a good extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of cucumber, shallots, and usually fresh chives and basil. And to garnish it with anything you want, you could garnish it with lobster or shrimp or not at all. It doesn't necessarily need any addition to it, but, you know, keeping that cold and chilled. Another idea for something, a chilled soup, is chilled peach soup. And I was thinking
Your peach soup was always really, really good.
I was thinking about when we first came here, we did Zoomerang a couple of times, and that used to be a black tie event out at the zoo. And I was talking to one of my cooks about it the other day.
Oh, my God, that was hot.
Oh, that was,
that
yeah.
First,
seeing people in their tuxedo.
I've never perspired so much in a tuxedo.
Yeah, tuxedos, super hot. But anyway, I knew that it would be, obviously, it was going to be hot. So we did chilled peach soup, and it was always really, really popular. And I used to make the chilled peach soup where I would blend it with sour cream and a little bit of brown sugar. And
didn't you put booze in there?
I sometimes have put Gosling's Black Seal rum
in. There we go. Now you're talking.
And I was thinking what I would do now is that I would puree the peaches instead just with a little bit of fresh lime juice. And then garnish it with a little bit of creme fraiche and have just a little bit of brown sugar on top of the soup. And I think that would be really pretty and bright, and I would totally skip the alcohol in it now. But
it's fun. It'd be nice to have with a brunchy cocktail or something, that's
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Well, and another chilled soup, I think we're about to get plums in. Shouldn't we, within the next couple of weeks, see the beginning of plums, or are we going to have a bad plum season?
We will probably see the blue plums, the Italian prune plums.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been tough because a lot of the trees got frost right when it was flowering.
Right,
so.
Right.
A lot of the ones in northern Baltimore County and towards Pennsylvania did not produce.
Well, if you could get plums, and it doesn't really matter what variety there, but again, just considering acidity and sweetness, I love to make nectarine and plum soup. And when I do that, I leave the skins on both fruits. And
oh, so you get a little tannin.
Oh, you get tannin, you get a beautiful, beautiful color, and it's very good for you. So something like that where you puree the two fruits, and again, I would probably still puree in a little bit of, you don't have to, but you could puree in a little bit of creme fraiche or garnish it with that, but you could kind of go either route, whether it's the peach soup or the plum and nectarine. So starting off with some chilled soups. And, you know, also you want to think about what you're going to have on display. What do you want out for your guests when they come in? Because it is awfully easy for the cook to have, you know, things right there ready for guests so that they can immediately have something to nibble on.
It's also nice to walk in and have some wonderful little snack ready to go right in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah.
The soup, it's funny, to all of this talking about this particular year, because this is a funny summer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the corn, some of the corn's been very, very good. Makes me think that if you're going to do a hot soup,
mm-hmm.
your corn soup, that husk-roasted corn soup that you've made for years and years, would be great. And that's not the most complicated one to make.
No, it's...
And people could do that, maybe a little bit cooler brunch in the morning.
Right. I roast corn in the husk for about 35 minutes at 350 degrees, and then cool it down a little bit, cut it off the cob, and don't get too close. Don't scrape the cob. After you've cut the corn off of the cob, get your soup pot going, saute a small dice of onions and a little bit of butter, add a little bit of tasso ham, and I also brown off separately small dice of bacon, and then take all the fat off of that after it's nice and crispy, and that will go into the soup at the very end. So going back to the soup pot where you have a little bit of butter, you've sauteed your onions, and you've added actually in this case it would be a brunoise of tasso ham, which is the smallest of dice. And then add... And
tasso is that, like, Louisiana-spiced, Cajun-spiced ham.
Cajun-cured ham.
So, no wonder I always love this soup. There's two kinds of pork in it.
Right. Well, and tasso ham has a lot of spices. As you say, it's Cajun-cured, so it has a lot of spices on the outside of it, and that introduces into the soup really beautifully. And it's usually pretty heavy on paprika, a little bit of garlic, and certainly has dried spices, thyme and oregano and basil on it. So once you add cream to that pot, then you can add the corn and bring it up to a boil. It doesn't have to cook very long. You've already, everything in there pretty well is cooked already.
It's so, like the sweetness of the corn and the mm-hmm. and the little bit of spice infusing and the mm-hmm. the little bit of smoke from the bacon infusing in the soup is just a
right. And add the bacon at the end.
Fantastic thing.
A little bit of pepper, freshly ground pepper. Cook it for probably another 5 minutes. And this is if you're pre-cooking, you know, making your soup ahead, so all you have to do is heat it up later, which is what I'm assuming you're doing. And don't forget that black pepper. You're going to want that in there. And then I finish it with whole grain mustard, and that needs to be done off the heat. You do not cook it with that whole grain mustard in there because of the level of acidity that it adds to the soup. It adds balance to the soup. Yeah, and everything's left whole, so you don't have to puree. You don't have to strain anything. I mean, it's I call it a chowder. It does not have potatoes in it because I don't think it needs anything else added to it.
But I can't imagine anything making it richer. I mean,
right.
It's really
one
of those terrific, satisfying.
It's really
satisfying.
Pretty. Mm-hmm. And you just don't want to overcook it. That's what makes it a good soup. If you were to cook it too long and actually reduce the cream, you would find it to be way too heavy. So it really is a fast cook. I mean, you can make that soup in 30 minutes after you've
roasted
the
corn.
It's fun
to think. I mean, you could get corn from the market,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and make that soup this morning for brunch and... That's pretty terrific.
That's a good soup.
It's rich enough that you don't have to have, like, because if you're giving people a hot thing first, mm-hmm. you can do maybe a room temperature dish or something that sits out and it's not a big deal for a main dish.
And one of the other things I was thinking about, just a big, you know, beautiful white platter with, or your favorite platter, no matter what it looks like, but just something with sides that you could make a great salad, which would be large dice of watermelon, seedless, a little bit of peaches, and you want to toss those in a little bit of acid, and heirloom tomatoes, and a julienne of either radicchio or treviso. And
so a nice bitter.
Exactly, and a little bit of bib lettuce, which I have growing in my garden. So when I made this salad this week, and really having the contrast between the radicchio and the sweet, tender, wonderful butter lettuce or bib lettuce was very nice, and to have all that sweet fruit in there, I made a dressing where I took some of the watermelon and pureed it in the blender, and I put it in a saute pan and reduced it down with fresh lime juice and fresh grapefruit juice. I added a tiny bit of sugar because it becomes pretty acidic as you're reducing it down, but I reduced it probably by maybe 70%. So watermelon juice, a little bit of lime juice, and a little bit, mostly, it's mostly watermelon juice. So let's say it's 75% watermelon juice and 25% lime. And I use pink grapefruit, which also is a little bit sweeter, I think, than white grapefruit, and reduce it down, add a little sugar, and then cool it a bit, and then just whisk in a little bit of corn oil, which is a good neutral oil. You don't have to add salt or pepper, because honestly, the salad itself should get salt and pepper to order, or as you're making the salad. And and then just toss everything else, everything together. So you have the bib lettuce, the radicchio or treviso, the three fruits, basically the tomato, the peaches, and the watermelon, and drizzle on that beautiful dressing. And actually on the side, when I was cutting my tomatoes, I did actually a small dice of the tomatoes. I did toss those. I did dress those with a good extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper. So those were also kind of just ready to go. And a little bit of that juice coming out of there and adding that to the salad as well is really, really good.
It's pretty sharp and sweet, mm-hmm. and a little bitter. It hits all the points of the palate at one time.
And it's not going to hurt it if you make it, you know, just before your guests get there. You can kind of have all the components ready in your refrigerator, and then, everyone should be here in about 30 minutes. Just put it together and put it on the platter. If you have room in your refrigerator, put the platter back in the refrigerator so it's nice and cold. And then as your guests get there and you feel it's time to start to serve it, that can be one of the first things out. And I think that's a great way to start. It's so, again, fresh and bright and lively. You know, it's delicious, actually. I love the reduction. The little quick dressing is really nice add.
People always want to drink Prosecco, and there's an ocean of maybe not great Prosecco in the market. There's a producer, Nino Franco, that makes fantastic mm-hmm. Prosecco, and I'm just thinking how nice it would be.
Yeah,
because there's balance to the wine, but there is some sweetness. There's enough sweetness and enough acid to handle something like that,
mm-hmm.
and great to have as a first something, especially if you're like out in the garden and set a table out there.
That sounds beautiful, and also, you know, celebratory in a way, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, but it makes you feel special when you drink
bubbles
sparkling wine.
Bubbles put you on the mini vacation, right?
another salad, you know, a bistro, traditional bistro salad, frisée with a poached egg. That typically has lardon as well.
Well, that can be a main course. That can be a main course for brunch. I mean, that's a great, if you made that corn soup, that'd be a great
second course.
Main course after that.
Right.
It's funny. It sounds fancy, you know, salad du frisée. It's a bacon and egg salad.
Right. And it's just so good. And the dressing, you know, again, should be nice and sharp. You should have a good oil in there. And you're going to poach an egg and put that on top of the salad. So you have protein that way. And if you want...
The world is not capable of poaching an egg with accuracy sometimes. So what's a pretty good guideline for you're having... three guests, you're one person, so you're going to poach four eggs to make the salad, or you're going to be a madman and you're going to poach eight eggs to make the salad. So what do I have to do besides buy really good
fresh eggs,
pastured eggs?
One of the key things to cooking eggs is really to have them be at room temperature too. So it really is better. Okay, so you're going to have a pot of water with a little bit of white vinegar in it. You want a neutral vinegar. And I would say, you know, for a gallon pot, you want a cup of vinegar. You don't want to overdo the vinegar, but you want to have enough in for it to coagulate the egg.
Do you need a gallon pot for...
not for four eggs.
Four eggs.
No. a small pot with some vinegar in it and water, and bring it up to a boil and then turn it down to a simmer and crack your eggs into little individual bowls. That way you can just tip them gently into the simmering water.
You just kind of slide them into the
mm-hmm,
water,
mm-hmm.
out of the bowl.
You would never want to just break it into the water. You're not going to be successful doing that.
Yeah, I always use like a teacup and just...
Right, and that's perfect. It only takes about a minute and a half. You want the egg to still be soft in the center, very soft in the center. You want it to just sort of to have just come together. Now, if you're doing this when you need it, I might cook it a little bit longer, and then, you know, you want to be able to move it around. You need a slotted spoon or some sort of something that has, slots in it, and just pull that out. And if you're doing it ahead of time, they should go into an ice bath, so ice water, pretty loose ice water, so you're not hurting the egg as you dip it in there. And what that does is it allows you to trim up the egg. So if you want it to be nice and neat and pretty, you can use your scissors and trim off some of the excess white that doesn't maybe look nice. And then when you are ready to serve, all you have to do is drop it just long enough to warm it or make it hot. But you want it to be loose. And also, I think you need to remember to season the egg. Even with cooks, sometimes I have to remind the cook to, hey, don't forget to salt that, or don't forget to put the dressing on the egg. And another way, and I know this won't appeal to everyone, but I am currently doing the salad with grilled veal sweetbreads. And as I said, I know that doesn't appeal
to
everyone.
Dandy garnish.
Oh, I have to say it's awfully good. So,
it ought to make sense, crispy on the outside and creamy on the inside.
It does. And to have the sweetbread with the lettuce and the lardon and the you know, sharp dressing, it's and the poached egg sort of just, you know, the yolk going all over that sweetbread, that is some kind of fun.
When we come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine, you're going to have to give us your secret recipe for the dressing for the frisée salad.
All right.
I'm going to go through the method on that. All of that and more on the Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So Cindy, you're about to give us your top secret frisée salad vinaigrette.
All right. So I don't know what's top secret about it, but it's red wine vinegar and a little bit of finely chopped shallot and 50% corn oil and 50% extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper. So whisk.
Not top secret at all.
There's nothing top secret about it. It's a simple vinaigrette.
No mustard, no secret ingredients.
No. You just want to have a good ratio. I would do 1-4 ratio of vinegar to oil and or oil to vinegar, I should say. That would be really crazy.
That'd be really sharp.
But yeah, and one of the things about that dressing is a little bit of it needs to go into the pan at the beginning. And I will say there is sort of something top secret about it. When you go to get your pan hot, and please remember, you're just barely wilting your lettuce. So literally with a hot pan, if you're doing 2 or 3 or 4 salads in that good size saute pan, you're going to toss it in there and almost immediately take it off the heat and just toss it around and then get it on the plate. And you need to be prepared for that.
It's enough, it's enough to take the chill off.
It is.
But not so
you're
much
not
to
cooking
cook
it. You're just wilting it, truly wilting it. That means your egg needs to go down first. So if you're cooking your egg from scratch, that needs to be in the poaching water first.
So you heat your pan, mm-hmm. you drop your egg.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then you deal with your greens.
Yeah. So you talk about secrets. So
and the greens are frisée.
Like all frisée. Yeah. Or curly endive.
Curly endive.
That's fine. Put the bacon in the pan, but reserve the fat from the bacon when you cook it because you want to put about a teaspoon or so probably per salad of the bacon fat in with the bacon. Work that first, and when I say that you're on high heat, that's 30 seconds.
That's what seasons the pan.
It does season the pan. Then you drop in, you shake up your vinaigrette very well, add it to the pan, and then immediately go in with the lettuce, salt and pepper, toss, and out it comes.
And it comes out into a bowl with the rest of the other 2/3 of the vinaigrette. Right.
Right. The vinaigrette you want to just kind of shake on top of the egg, then salt the egg, and a little bit more on top of the salad. You're going to need a little bit extra, not just what's in the pan.
Right, and then plenty of salt and pepper on the egg and
on the
salad.
Right.
All right, so but the frisée salad we talked about as a potential main course. Are there any other snacks that people could walk into the door
starters.
And,
right.
and know that maybe it's going to improve their morning? Maybe maybe their evening was not the best.
I love raw fish, and so if you can get your hands on some raw fish, what?
I'm just thinking, oh boy, if I had a hangover and you gave me raw fish.
Oh, well,
it might be really good, actually.
Okay. So maybe you went out fishing and caught a local wild rockfish. That would be really great. You could do a quick ceviche with that. And I love ceviche that's not been marinated for a long period of time. I make mine where I actually add the ceviche marinade to order. But if you should do for this, you want to do it ahead.
So you kind of like brush the slices of mm-hmm. of the fish with the mm-hmm. with the marinade.
But let's say you did go fishing, you have this beautiful fresh rockfish. Cut it into a very small dice. Put it in the bowl with a little bit of lime and lemon and a good extra virgin olive oil. Maybe a little fleur de sel if you have it. If not, kosher salt. Freshly ground black pepper. A very, very fine chop of jalapeno, cilantro, and call it a day. and just toss and have that on. You're going to have to figure out some way to keep that very cold while it's out. That's, you know, so again, it should come out when your guests are there and you're ready to actually be serving. Do you have any suggestions for how to, you know, ice underneath that?
I mean, a bigger bowl with ice and a smaller bowl on top of that. That's right. That's one of the only easy ways to do it.
Okay, and just stay on top of it.
If the ice melts in the bigger bowl,
you're in trouble.
You may float that smaller one and end up with watery ceviche.
So maybe if the ice is a little bit crushed and you just kind of have a backup. Actually, you could pop it in the freezer and have it be just a little bit extra cold, that bowl with the crushed ice in it, and then pop the bowl into it and then just plan on replacing it. Maybe have a backup bowl in the freezer with more crushed ice or you can use whole cubes.
You could also just pass little spoons in the ceviche.
Mm-hmm. Or have spoons out and just, you know, say, hey, time to eat this right now,
having
y'all.
It almost like ceviche, almost like a cold dip with fresh fried tortilla chips.
Oh, yeah. That would be fun.
And maybe, an attitude-adjusting fine beer might be a good way to begin a Sunday.
There you go. And then salmon tartare, I think for brunch, it would be just so much fun to do pink grapefruit pieces in there as your acid, again, sort of a neutral oil, corn with just a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, chives, fresh chives, and, you know, I would toast some sesame seeds and toss them in, and maybe even a little bit of ginger, just to give it a different flavor profile.
I will admit to almost wanting to put like one tiny drop of sesame oil or something in
there. Sure, that would be delicious.
That might be might be a fun thing, and that tartare is a pretty good cocktail match.
For what?
If it has the sesame oil, maybe even like a very old-fashioned whiskey sour. Hmm. Not an old-fashioned and a whiskey sour combined, but a very old-school whiskey sour.
That would be fun.
That you make with egg whites and the fresh juice. And
What else is in there?
Your spirit of choice.
I don't know how to make that.
Whiskey.
Okay, that's it? It's just...
You can play games with a little simple syrup or a little bit of Cointreau if you want to. Some people will... You could use a little bit of Luxardo, which is a cherry liqueur. In there as well. Sort of depends how tart you make it with your citrus. The goal is to balance out the tart and the sweet between the citrus and what you do the sugary. And it also depends on how much of flavor you want from your spirit. Is it a bourbon that has a strong sweet flavor? Is it rye that has a more savory flavor than that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's you kind of get to play your games with that. But I have strong memories of my my grandfather mixing pitchers of whiskey sour for, Sunday 1 o'clock brunches at their house when I was a little boy.
That's great.
It does require making the sour mix to order.
Okay.
You know, you have to, if you're using another seasoning spirit like Luxardo or Cointreau or something.
And, I love Cointreau.
And the egg white.
Mm-hmm.
And getting it good and frothy, but not wild.
Okay.
So that you can shake it if you're going to pour individual ones. Or if you're making a pitcher, you get it pretty frothy. And a little bit more sugar will help stabilize that,
And then
too.
You pour it over ice, or?
You can pour that over ice. If you're being moderate about brunch, you'd pour that over ice.
Okay.
Let me get you focused on egg dishes.
Okay.
For just a second. Let's talk about one or two more egg dishes to round out possible brunch menus.
I would love to suggest a book, and it's by Michel Roux, and it's Roux, produced by Wiley Publishers, and it's called Eggs. And there are so many. His recipes are great, and he's a great chef. And there are a lot of different types of recipes. And I'm actually going to quote a recipe from his book, which he had an idea of putting a poached egg on a little onion tartlet. And I just thought, oh my gosh, that's a perfect thing to do for brunch, because you can make the tartlets are made from puff pastry, not from, you know, tart dough. And how easy is that for people, you know, to just go buy puff pastry if you don't want to make it yourself, which is a little bit time consuming.
It's like a little flammekuchen.
Mm-hmm, exactly. When I saw it, I'm like, oh, I love those. So a little puff pastry circle, caramelize a little bit of onion, maybe a little bit of cheese on there. You could put a little Reggiano on, a little bit of fresh thyme, and then poach your egg. And you have this wonderful, almost like little nest or pocket to put that poached egg in. And I just love that idea. And I think I would also still hit that with a sort of that acidic vinaigrette, you know, maybe a little red wine vinegar. Now we could add your mustard that you like, because mustard with that onion tart would be incredible. Incredible, and whole grain mustard.
That's what
actually
you put with your flammekuchen.
All right, there you go. All right, so I just think that would be a fun way to handle poached eggs.
Dealing with the onions,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Dry pan, So you put a saute pan on, get it hot, and really thinly julienne the onions, and just put them in that dry pan and shake them around. You have to you don't get to leave. You don't get to use your phone. You have to stand there and concentrate.
Let them sweat and move.
Yeah, and they will become beautifully caramelized. And at some point, you can add a little bit of butter, and sometimes I even add a tiny bit of sugar.
And pretty low heat, right?
Yes, and I often deglaze that pan with a little bit of aged sherry vinegar, and wow, that's some good stuff. And that way, then if you did do the vinegar to deglaze that pan, I would not add a vinaigrette to the dish. But that's a great way to handle poached eggs. One of the other dishes is scrambled eggs. And, you know, for me, breaking the curd up in that egg and really handling the egg properly makes all the difference in the world when you're making scrambled eggs. And a great way to make that into a little bit more serious dish is the way they do in France. They'll often add a very thin slice of madrange ham to the pan or onto the plate, and you can just, you know, lay your eggs on top of the ham, and you've kind of given them everything they need. There's your little bit of meat that you wish you had. You don't have to make bacon and deal with that. You can just, you know, kind of quickly, you know, spoon those beautifully scrambled eggs over that wonderful slice of ham.
Yeah, there's also one. They do fried eggs like that called au sur le plat.
Mm-hmm.
That are you get a little bit of that fat in the pan that you know, that you can baste a fried egg with too, which is
yum.
Pretty darn nice.
Right. So I was thinking a wonderful way to do French toast is to use brioche. It you can saute it super fast. Because it is such a light bread. So if you can get your hands on brioche, or if you make your own, do a slice, not too thick. I don't believe in crazy thick French toast. But slice it, go into a mixture of cream, eggs that you whisk together with cinnamon and a little bit of sugar. And this is a great place to add a little alcohol if you like. You could add your...
So it's sort of like a sweetened custard mixture.
Mm-hmm. You could add your Cointreau that you just spoke about, which I think is gorgeous, or a little bit of cognac or a little bit of rum, whatever you like, or not at all.
Maybe at this moment in time, a little bourbon.
And a little vanilla bean. So, or bourbon. Yes. Oh, yum. That sounds good. Especially if you put a little vanilla bean in, that's going to be really good. And then you just quickly dip, because that bread is soft. This is not, you know, your day old stale bread that you're making French toast with. So dip it in quickly and then go right into a pan with, I would use clarified butter. So just the fat of the butter, which will give you a little bit higher heat.
If one is
without
not using
burning.
Clarified butter, just canola oil.
I can't stand the idea of sauteing in oil for
brioche. I did it just to see you make the face.
No, yeah. No, it's got to be butter.
Just to see you make
it'll just
the
be
face.
Easier for you if you use clarified butter, but I actually do it in whole butter and brown both sides, and then make a mixture of, I would peel the apples. Oh my gosh, if they're Honeycrisp, that's going to be so good because they're tart and sweet and they're crispy. I would peel them, do a small, maybe a medium dice, and saute, here comes more butter, Tony. Saute the apples in butter with cinnamon, brown sugar, and then add a little bit, and you can add a little vanilla to that too if you want, but if you've already used it in the batter, you don't need to. And then finish with, if you want, pecans. And I would have toasted the pecans, crumbled them up into smaller pieces if they were halves, and then add that to the pan at the end so they don't become too soggy. But that would be very good over your brioche French toast.
Sounds awfully good. I'm going to tell you about the next snack that you're going to wish that you didn't learn about because you're going to make it. Remember the tomato skins?
Oh, I love those things. Yes.
So do a great big apple peel from a sweet apple like a Honeycrisp.
Right.
A little bit of salt. Fry it in the fryer,
mm-hmm.
and the deep fryer. When it comes out, a tiny little bit of sugar and cayenne.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Cayenne? Yes, sir. That sounds good.
It's crazy good.
I think the other thing that's one of the things that's so common in France and is such a nice thing to have for brunch, because you just put it in the oven, because you can make it the day before, is quiche. And a well-made quiche is unbelievably good. And also it kind of fills all your needs, too. Because
quiche
is
a holy grail for a lot of home cooks.
Oh, my goodness. And make a great tarte dough and, you know, a simple custard, basically 2 cups of milk, 2 cups of heavy cream, 6 large eggs, a little bit of salt and pepper, and maybe a little bit of nutmeg. I mean, that's a good, good recipe to go by.
For the custard that's going to go into the crust.
And then, you know, you can add whatever you want, but just I encourage you to make sure it's small, whatever it is. If it's bacon, it's got to be tiny. If it's meat, if it's ham, it needs to be a small dice.
Let's get into finishing up the quiche and the pastry when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So Cindy, we were mid-quiche. So let's separate it into custard and crust, because those are really, that's the whole ballgame, right?
Right. So the custard is really simple to make. You can actually even put everything in a blender, but personally, I just whisk everything in a bowl. So the 2 cups of milk and the 2 cups of heavy cream, if this is a recipe you're going to follow, needs to come up to just below a boil. So put it in a sauce pot, make it hot, take it out, and then let it cool down for a few minutes so it's not as hot. And then you can whisk, and on the side, you should have your 6 large eggs whisked. Now you're going to whisk them into the hot dairy product, season it, and I would just pass it through a strainer. All the pieces of the egg, nice and cleanly
right,
out of
course.
There. And then that's your custard. So from there, you add whatever you want. And I had started to say, you know, what will happen is you want to bake this at a temperature that the custard doesn't scramble, obviously. And you don't want to have garnish in there that's so big that it breaks up the custard, because your garnish is going to sink to the bottom of the custard. And you also don't want to overdo the quantity of garnish, because you want enough custard in between the pieces of garnish that everything's going to hold together nicely for you. So you're not sinking a lot of money into this, because you can only put so much bacon or ham or crab meat or vegetables, if you want to put zucchini or asparagus, or if you're just putting cheese in your custard, which is great. I love just a Gruyere and Reggiano custard. It doesn't have to have anything else in it. Or you could do goat cheese.
Duck confit and green olives or something.
All right. Well,
that Seriously.
Sounds good.
Doesn't that sound
it sounds good.
Good.
Yeah. So
sorry, I'm having quiche dreams.
You want to blind bake your dough. You know, so you have
so
a quiche pan with
blind
a high.
Bake doesn't mean blindfolds. That's dangerous.
So you have a quiche pan with a high side, preferably, and it's a fluted pan. You want to lightly butter the pan, the tart shell, and then flour it so that your custard doesn't stick. Or you can even cut a circle of parchment paper out, put that on the bottom of the ring mold or the mold, and again, butter and flour that so it doesn't stick to the paper either. And that's on both sides, by the way. And then put in your tart dough, press it to the sides, and then you put in something like lentils. You want to put like a piece of parchment paper in there, and then lentils
or
some sort of bean.
So you're going to par-bake that
dried
shell.
Dried bean. Mm-hmm. You par-bake the shell, and then
what goes into that dough that makes up that shell?
Is typically flour, butter, you know, a little bit of salt. But just, you know, find your favorite recipe for a tart dough and use what
it's a savory
your,
one. It's not
it's a
sweet,
savory,
yeah.
Right. What you're used to working with is going to be fine. And put that in, blind bake it, and then pull it out, let it cool down, and then you put your custard in. And you do not want to go too far when you bake it, because obviously you have to cook your custard now and you don't want to over dry or over bake.
It's like you're finishing it, but you're not browning it.
Right. Pour your custard in with whatever garnish, and you want to bake that on really at about 290 degrees. And you want to be pretty familiar with that your oven is on temperature. So I always suggest using an oven thermometer to make sure things are right, because all of our ovens are different. And you do want to rotate, and I would put it on a sheet pan, which helps to protect the bottom of the tart from getting too brown. And you don't want to be too close to your heating element either. So you want to be about 1/4 of the way up in your oven, and don't do convection. You want it to bake slowly. You have a custard here, so you want to handle it very delicately. And once it's set, it comes out, because you do not want to overbake it.
It'll keep carrying over a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. It will. And then from there, it's, you know, are you eating it today? Then let it cool down a little bit, because it needs to solidify a bit. And then, you know, cut it when you're ready. Or if you're pre-baking it, if you're making this the day before, you're going to have to refrigerate it, obviously. And so do think about that when you go to bring it out to bake it, I would bring it out and let it come up to room temperature. So I'd let it sit out for probably about 30 minutes before I went to bake it. So again, you can heat it up very gently, 300 degrees, 325 degrees, no convection.
And get it just...
just warm.
Just warm.
Yeah, you don't want it. Yeah. The more you cook it, the more you're going to ruin the custard. And that's the whole thing.
You're just going to make it tough. The whole thing is for it to be tender.
Right. And that is the key to making an excellent quiche, is not overcooking that custard or baking it too high heat. So that's quiche.
Any of the dishes you want to throw on potential menu items for brunch?
I think that shrimp and grits, being a very traditional...
Oh, it's nice to have a southern dish.
Yeah, it is really a... It is typically a breakfast dish. And, you know, once you had a bunch of Southern chefs start doing it in restaurants, it's become much more thought of as an appetizer. But it started off as a breakfast dish.
There are a lot of chefs who do a lot of variations, but I remember you explaining once upon a time to me about the simple way, like they would go out shrimping, come back.
Right. You know, you can only think that if you go out shrimping at about 4 a.m. and you're out there all, you know, the rest of the night until the early morning hours, you're hungry when you come back. And you may have had a couple of beers while you're out there, maybe if you're you, where you're out there shrimping, not me.
I don't do a lot of shrimping, and I don't drink a lot of beer at 5:15 a.m., okay?
But when you come in, no matter what you've done, you're going to be hungry.
Now, if someone's told
me, and you're looking at all these beautiful fresh shrimp, why in the world you wouldn't cook them right away and have some, I don't know.
Yeah, if someone told me it's brunch, I'm going to have something to drink, because that's permission to take the rest of the day off.
All right. So with head-on shrimp, you want to pull the antenna off. You don't really want to cook that part. It's not necessary. You're not going to be eating it. It's just going to clog up your pan. So then leave the heads on because they are very fresh if you're in that situation. Otherwise, if you're using a headless shrimp, just peel down to the tail. And again, getting back to the head-on shrimp, I also take the tail off, the shell tail off, because you've already got the head on. That's enough to mess around with. You don't need further shell to have in your pan. Either way, saute in a little bit of fresh butter and on low heat. You do not make that pan super hot. I actually use a cold pan. It's one of the only times I can think of where I cook, where I go into a cold pan, because I do not like shrimp to be cooked hard. I want them to be cooked pretty gently. So you have a cold pan, melt the butter, add the shrimps, move them around, and right at the end, add a little bit of finely chopped, nice fresh garlic, and maybe even a shot of lemon, a little salt, and pepper, and serve it over those beautiful creamy grits that are made with milk, a tiny bit of butter and salt, and hopefully they're stone ground. The long cook time is your grits. Grits take about 40 minutes to cook when they are fresh stone ground. So that hopefully is already in your refrigerator, and all you have to do is pull the grits out, heat them up with a little bit of extra milk, and then saute those shrimp, and there you go.
Where can one buy fresh grits? I keep thinking of that very friendly Quaker guy, and that doesn't strike me as being the fresh milled grits from the South that
thankfully,
I want.
Thankfully, there are a number of places you can buy freshly stone ground grits now. Anson's Mill is who I use. They're actually based out of Columbia, but the company also works out of Charleston, South Carolina. So they have a great product, and they have a lot of great products. The man that owns the mill, Glenn Roberts, I've known since I was 19 years old, and he is a brilliant man and has really done a lot to preserve the pathways of Southern cooking through his products. So he uses an heirloom variety corn to be ground for grits, and they are really spectacular.
Yeah, they're really, the ones you use smell and taste. You can taste the sweet, fresh corn.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing when you get it. It's just another sign of when you have a great product, what you can make with it and how good your food can be, because you've started off with an ingredient that is excellent.
I mean, you're talking about three ingredients. You're talking about grits, butter, and shrimp.
Right. And a little garlic. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good.
So is it time?
For the chef's challenge?
Is it time for the chef's challenge?
Yes. You're going first.
Are
you
prepared?
Here you go, Tony. It's brunch.
I'm not going
and your
first.
Situation,
this is ladies first. My situation.
And your situation.
Mm-hmm. My situation.
You do have, you'll note at the bottom of the page, full pantry, full cellar, and full bar. So free to
That's fun.
Enjoy that aspect.
So is it,
but your situation is that you're at, I'm making you come to my house.
Your house is fine to cook in. Yeah.
Right. So my house, my farm.
I think it'll do.
Which means you also have a garden. So.
Let's see. Arugula, peaches, eggs, bacon, Gruyere, goat cheese, homemade sausage. In a perfect world, the sausage I would be making in my brain right now is chorizo from goat. I don't know why I have goat on the brain, but day-old baguette, lump crab, heads-on shrimp, heirloom tomato. I mean, you obviously need to do an egg dish. If there's cream, I'd make a frittata, which is really similar to your mm-hmm. quiche filling, you know, the quiche custard with the eggs and the cream. But I'd want to make that frittata with the goat chorizo and the goat's cheese and a little bit of the heirloom tomato. I'd have to really drain those tomatoes, otherwise they'll make my frittata really
water down the eggs.
Water down and sort of do an oddball thing, which is I'm not going to do a quickie in like a heavy pan. I'm going to do it in a water bath, so maybe in a gratin dish, something like that. And assuming I can go out in your, actually, you know what? That arugula just chopped up, served with that frittata, and the day-old baguette, just toast slices in butter in the pan. Yes, I'm using butter. Toast slices in butter in the pan, and make little warm crouton. Serve that alongside with the frittata. That'd be pretty nice. What else do I have to play with? I have bacon. I have Gruyere. I have heads on shrimp and lump crab. There's a little more tomato left around. So I've got no mayo. I can make no crab cakes.
You have full pantry.
Full pantry means?
Pretty much you have what you need.
Oh, okay.
Condiment-wise.
Yeah, I'm going to do an odd thing. I'm going to make crab cakes with a little bit of rendered off bacon, really in tiny fine dice.
You can imagine what I have at my house, my pantry.
And what I really wish I had to serve with that, just a little bit of green onion.
Okay.
But that would be good fun. And serve those crab cakes on slices of the heirloom tomato. I think that's a solid. That would be a solid and simple dish. I think the only thing that's left to play with are the heads on shrimp and the Gruyere. I'm not going to put trees with the seafood. I can't do that.
Right.
There's too much Italian cooking in my veins to to do that. The Gruyere is going to have to stay in the fridge. The heads on shrimp, I would poach and peel. And if you have even just little simple mustard, mayonnaise, Tabasco, make up a little sauce and just serve those very easily. Or use a little bit of the heirloom tomato and make a little puree and put it in there. But literally just the chilled shrimp with that's a nice snack to walk into. You got the peaches left to slice and have for dessert. And I know what I'm doing in the cellar. I was going to say, people.
So what's happening with the drinking?
what's happening is they're having those shrimp as a snack. They're going to have that crab cake as with the heirloom tomato with a little bit of bacon in it as first course. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have the egg dish, that sort of very tender frittata with the goat cheese and the goat chorizo and the day-old baguette as a main course. And what do I want? Great big old white Rioja, maybe. All the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that sounds nice. Maybe a Magnum.
That might be a good font. Or White Chateau Neuf du Pape. Maybe Marcou with about 10 years bottle age on it.
Yes, please. It'd
be pretty nice. So that's in my brain. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Let's see if you can read my handwriting. That's job number one.
Sweet white corn, zucchini, sweet peppers, eggplants, poblano peppers, whole chicken. Oh, good. Small amount of lump crab, chicken stock, Roma, tomatoes, ginger, oregano, cilantro, blackberries, milk, butter, duck fat. Mm. Okay.
Your situation is that you're in your kitchen.
Mine?
Yeah.
At work?
No, at your house.
Okay,
at your house. And one of your guests is a vegetarian.
Okay, good. All right. I think, obviously, the whole chicken, I absolutely have to use that duck fat on that whole chicken. I've never done that, and it seems like a good idea. So I'm going to put a little duck fat underneath the skin with oregano, and then I'm going to melt the duck fat and baste that chicken with it the whole time it's in the oven. And near the end, I'm going to put the sweet peppers in the oven with the chicken and the poblano peppers so that they roast beautifully. I'm also going to roast eggplant in the oven. So I'll cut the eggplant in half, rub it with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper on the flesh side, and roast it flesh side down. And that can be in the oven with the chicken. There's nothing wrong with that. And the zucchini, I'm going to do, I'm going to grill the zucchini. So I'm going to do a battenet, which is sort of like the size of your little finger and in a rectangle. And I'm going to rub that with extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and a little bit of that ginger just for fun. So maybe I'll just kind of chop up the ginger and add it to that marinade for the zucchini. And that would also be good on the eggplants when they come out of the oven. So when you work with the roasted eggplant, you you allow the pockets of seeds to be pretty easily exposed. So you can, when the eggplant cools down a little bit, I remove the outer shell that becomes trash, and you can just sort of open it up and pull the pockets of seeds out so you don't have too many seeds. And then I'll brush that with that same marinade. So you'll have eggplant roasted, which I'm just going to mold onto the plate. I'm going to have to be, there's not a lot you can do, or you could maybe quenelle it. But if I mold the eggplant on the plate, I have my sweet peppers and my poblano peppers and a julienne. I've added my battenae of zucchini to that. And then I'll just break down that whole chicken and have everybody gets, you know, a little bit of the breast meat, a little bit of the leg or thigh meat. And that's the garnish for that. And then with blackberries, blackberries and Roma tomatoes. Ah, I have chicken stock, so I'm going to deglaze that roasting pan with the chicken stock. I'm going to add a little bit. Do I have wine?
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to
add. Your house.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. There's a lot of wine. So I'll deglaze the pan with a little bit of white wine and the chicken stock and reduce that down. And I'm going to make a very light sauce. I'm actually going to mount that with, I'll reduce it down so it's probably about 50% of the way towards being a sauce. So it's really more of a jus, and I will mount it with cold butter, which will help to thicken it a little bit, and that will nappe over the top of the chicken and will also become a sauce for all those vegetables on the plate. The sweet corn, the vegetarian will enjoy, you know, definitely the peppers and the eggplant and the zucchini. That's a great course. The sweet corn I can make a little quick soup from, and I'm going to say I have onions and shallots at my house, so saute onion and shallot and a little bit of butter. I will roast the corn, cut it off the cob, add that to the pot, add a little bit of cream, because I have that at my house, and a little salt and pepper. And
I just almost disallowed your cream.
make a quick sweet corn soup, and I will blend that and strain it. And that would be a very pretty course, first course for everybody. And that could be garnished with a little bit of the cilantro. So I have Roma tomatoes and blackberries. The blackberries are going to become dessert, and I'm just going to make a quick tart. So I'll make a blackberry tart. And again, I might actually use a little bit of that duck fat. I'll put it in with the butter, which will make for a very interesting tart, and make a quick blackberry tart, maybe even little individual tarts. Or I might even do them in stove pans, just so that everybody has their own kind of little hot tart in front of them at the end of the meal. And the Roma tomatoes are going to be its own salad. So sliced Romas.
I thought the southerner in you might make little sweet biscuits and serve the blackberries with that.
I never thought of that.
No?
But that would be good. But the Roma tomatoes can be a little cold salad, just great extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and some fresh herbs from the garden. And I have butter lettuces and red romaine and Grandma Hadley's speckled lettuce, so that would go with the Roma tomatoes.
Grandma Hadley's speckled lettuce? What is Grandma Hadley doing for lettuce now?
I don't know. All I know is that it's really good,
and
it's a
little tart. That is the most ridiculous name for a
lettuce.
It's a little
tart. I love it. I love it.
Well, that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you want to listen to this program or other podcasts, please go to the WYPR website, look up the Foreman & Wolf page. If you want to correspond with us, send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter @ChefCindyWolf or on Instagram @ChefWolf.
Thanks so much for listening.
And happy Sunday.